Good to see all who are here again tonight. We make you welcome another time in the Lord's name and trust you'll remember the two remaining nights. We'll appreciate your help if possible then as well. Now we'd like to read from the book of Judges tonight and chapter 9. The book of Judges and chapter 9. Judges chapter 9. We'd have to read quite a bit in this chapter again. And verse number 1. And Abimelech the son of Jerubbaal went to Shechem unto his mother's brethren and communed with them and with all the family of the house of his mother's father, saying, Speak, I pray you, in the ears of all the men of Shechem, whether is better for you, either that all the sons of Jerubbaal, which are 70 persons, reign over you, or that one reign over you. Remember also that I am your bone and your flesh. And his mother's brethren spake of him in the ears of all the men of Shechem all these words, and their hearts inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, He is our brother. And they gave him 70 pieces of silver out of the house of Baal Berit, wherewith Abimelech hired vain and light persons which followed him. And he went unto his father's house at Ophrah, and slew his brethren, the sons of Jerubbaal, being 70 persons upon one stone. Notwithstanding, yet Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left, for he hid himself. And all the men of Shechem gathered together, and all the house of Millo, and went and made Abimelech king by the plain, or by the oak of the pillar that was in Shechem. And when they told it to Jotham, he went and stood in the top of Mount Gerizim, and lifted up his voice, and cried, and said unto them, Hearken unto me, ye men of Shechem, that God may hearken unto you. The trees went forth on a time to anoint the king over them, and they said unto the olive tree, Reign thou over us. But the olive tree said unto them, Should I leave my fatness, wherewith by me they honour God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees? And the tree said unto the fig tree, Come and reign over us. Verse 12, the tree said unto the vine. Verse 14, Then said all the trees unto the bramble, Come thou, and reign over us. And the bramble said unto the trees, If in truth ye anoint me king over you, then come and put your trust in my shadow, and if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. Now therefore, if ye have done truly and sincerely in that ye have made Abimelech king, and if ye have dealt well with Jerubbaal and his house, verse 19, if ye then have dealt truly and sincerely with Jerubbaal and with his house, this day, then rejoice ye in Abimelech, and let him also rejoice in you. But if not, let fire come out of Abimelech, and devour the men of Shechem, and the house of Millo, and let fire come out from the men of Shechem, and from the house of Millo, and devour Abimelech. And Jotham ran away and fled, and went to Beer, and dwelt there for fear of Abimelech his brother. When Abimelech had reigned 3 years over Israel, then God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech the men of Shechem, and the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech. Now, we have another few events, disagreements between Abimelech and the men of Shechem, and the way down to verse 45. And Abimelech fought against the city all that day, and he took the city and slew the people that was therein, and beat down the city and sowed it with salt. And when all the men of the tower of Shechem heard that, they entered into a hold in the house of the god Berith. And it was told Abimelech that the men of the tower of Shechem were gathered together. And then Abimelech goes up and cuts the branches. Verse 49, And all the people likewise cut down every man his bough, and followed Abimelech, and put them to the hold, and set the hold on fire upon them, so that all the men of the tower of Shechem died also, about 1,000 men and women. Then went Abimelech to Thebes. And the people go to the tower in Thebes, but 52, verse 52, And Abimelech came unto the tower and fought against it, and went hard unto the door of the tower to burn it with fire. And a certain woman cast a piece of a millstone, or cast an upper millstone upon Abimelech's head, and all to break his skull. Then he called hastily unto the young man his armour bearer, and said unto him, Draw thy sword and slay me, that the men say not of me, A woman slew him. And his young man thrust him through, and he died. Verse 56, thus God rendered the wickedness of Abimelech which he did unto his father in slaying his 70 brethren, and all the evil of the men of Shechem did God render upon their heads, and upon them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Jeroboam. Now that's a lengthy reading, and more than enough from the scripture. As you know, tonight brings us to our third visit to this ancient and important city of Shechem. I'm not for a moment under any illusion that perhaps some of these matters are not of particular interest, and maybe we think not of so great relevance to us in these days, but nevertheless I do trust that it will not be too wearisome as we try for another couple of nights to look at the significant scriptural scenes at Shechem. We have mentioned, just in case any were not here, we have been mentioning about the centrality of the position of Shechem in the land of Palestine, somewhere about 40 miles north of Jerusalem, nestling between Mount Ebal on the north and Mount Gerizim on the south. You might have noticed that Mount Gerizim was mentioned in tonight's reading. Commanding longitudinal routes and commanding latitudinal routes north, south and east, west, it was a very important place geographically. Historically, it was also important because it was a place where both Abraham and Jacob, the patriarchs, had been. And as we learned last night, in the conquest of the land of Canaan, the city of Shechem also played an important part. Interestingly, in the accounts of the book of Joshua, where one city after another capitulated to the invading armies, there is no reference made to the destruction or to the conquest of Shechem. It may be that the men of Shechem gave in quite easily, and without a fight, they gave in to the authority of the advancing and invading Israelites. Now, just for one second to recap so that we can move on tonight. When we were thinking about Shechem on Monday night, we discovered that it was a place of cleansing. You remember after the disaster at Shechem, Jacob told his people, he said, now you'll have to change your garments, you'll have to wash yourselves, we'll have to get clear from these idols, we'll bury them at the bottom of the yoke of the oak tree at Shechem. And in Genesis chapter 35, Shechem became for Jacob, after the compromise, it became a place of cleansing. Then when we jumped last night to Joshua at Shechem, it wasn't so much that Shechem was a place of cleansing, but Shechem was a place of consecration. And the old man Joshua gave his farewell speech to the gathered company, and he set up a great stone, and he wrote in a scroll, and he told the nation, he said, if you're going to go forward from this point, the only way to do it is to serve the Lord in sincerity and truth. No hypocrisy, no half-heartedness, no divided affections. He says you'll have to serve the Lord in sincerity and truth. I want you to remember those words. Those were the key words of last night's meeting. And what was a place of consecration for Jacob in the book of Genesis 35 became a place of cleansing, became a place of consecration for Joshua in his book and chapter 24. Now tonight, when we move to the book of Judges, the place of cleansing and the place of consecration, unfortunately, it becomes a place of confusion and corruption. We will discover exactly what that corruption is as we make our way through the chapter. As far as I know, there is no other chapter of the Bible that mentions Shechem so frequently as the book of Judges chapter 9. Tonight we are suffering similarly to what we suffered in previous nights. We're breaking into the middle of a story, but the ninth chapter of the book of Judges is more or less self-contained, so we do our best just to keep to this chapter and try and learn some of the lessons from the references to this city. Out of those 25 references to the city of Shechem in this chapter, ninth of Judges, I think there are about 14 references to the men of Shechem. You notice that expression coming up constantly. The men of Shechem. The men of Shechem did this. The men of Shechem did that. Ten of Shechem did the other. On about 12 occasions, the word that is translated men is not the usual word for men. On two of the occasions, just the men of Shechem, when it means generally all the people of Shechem or all the males in Shechem, the men of Shechem in the general sense. But on about a dozen of those occasions, if you're reading the Newbery Bible or any other Bible with a margin, it might indicate to you that that expression, the men of Shechem, the word men is the word that usually means lords or owners, possessors, our masters. So on most of the occasions when we read men of Shechem in this chapter, we're not thinking about the general population, but we're thinking about the men of the city who carried responsibility, what we would call in other passages of the Bible, the council or the elders of the city. The men of Shechem, in most cases here, are the men who were in authority. Now, what did they do? That will be the main subject of our consideration tonight. I broadly want to divide into three. First of all, I want to think about the person that was promoted over them. The men of Shechem had a person promoted over them. Then secondly, I want to think about the parable that was presented to them. Because there was a man preached a parable to the men of Shechem, a very interesting little piece of Bible colour language. And finally, not just the person promoted over them and the parable presented to them, but thirdly and finally, I want to think about the penalty that was paid by them. Now, that first division that I mentioned, it really comes to a climax in verse number 6 of the chapter. It says, all the men of Shechem gathered together and all the house of Millo and went and made Abimelech king by the plain of the pillar that was in Shechem. In itself, that seems to be quite a harmless verse. If we just had verse about the proceedings, it pretended that everything was going quite well. Here was a man who was made king. His appointment seemed to have universal agreement. There didn't seem to be a dissenting voice. You notice what it says? It says, all the men of Shechem gathered together, and all the house of Millo. Now the house of Millo is likely an expression in our Bible that refers to the aristocracy of the city, the people that lived in the upper class part of the city. So all the men of Shechem and all the house of Millo, they gathered together and they made Abimelech king. You say it's a unanimous vote, it's a harmonious vote. Everybody agrees this man has been made king. What else could you ask for? Not only did there seem to be a great harmony, but the place where he was made king was very significant. Do you see this? Tell me who made him king, but where they made him king. It says they made him king by the oak of the pillar that was in Shechem. Now there are the two things. You see, I hope if we don't have much success, one of the things that I hope to do is to show you how this runs right through the Bible. Here's a man now in Judges 9, and he's made king by the oak. Now, as soon as you would read about the oak, you say to yourself, that's the place where Jacob buried the idols. Aye, takes you back to Genesis. But it doesn't just say that he was made king by the oak, it says he was made king by the oak of the pillar. But you say, the pillar, if the oak takes me back to Jacob, the pillar takes me back to Joshua, because that's the big stone that Joshua set up, and the people said in Joshua told the people, serve the Lord in sincerity and truth, and they said, we will serve the Lord. Jacob buried the idols. Here's a man made king. Now you say, if this man's going to be king, and if he's going to be like Jacob, he'll have no idols. This man has been made king, and if he's going to be like the pillar, and he's going to be like Joshua, he'll serve the Lord in truth and in sincerity. So we have a man made king in a good place. Everybody is agreed. And we would just imagine that everything is bound to go on well. However, that's verse 6. And as you know, I've skipped out verses 1 to 5. And it's the first 5 verses that lets us see that verse 6 is not just as good as it might seem to be on the surface. Here's a man gets the authority in the city of Shechem. But the question that we want to ask is, how did he get authority? How did he get into this position? Because it's not only important for a man to have a position, but if he's going to get respect in the position, people will want to know, how did he arrive at it? Whether it's Shechem, whether it's Northern Ireland, whether it's Iowa, whether it's Guernavilla or anywhere else, it's one thing for a man to have a position in the assembly. But if the man is going to guide the assembly and to have the respect of the assembly, it's very, very important to see how he arrived at the position. Now what I will say tonight will have a good deal to do with a person getting power and how he gets power, or how he shouldn't get it, or how he should get it. The principles and the pathway to power will be mainly before us now for a couple of minutes. If you just jump back to verse number 1, it says, Abimelech of Jerubbaal went to Shechem, his brother, and communed with them, saying, speak, I pray thee, in the ears of the men of Shechem. And that doesn't give him a good start. Because we now discover when we go back to verse 1, that the man who gets kingship in verse says yes for himself. They didn't ask him. But he went, and he didn't even go straight about it. But he went to some of his mother's brethren, and he said to his mother's brethren, he said, look, he said, you're part of my family. He said, would you put in a good word for me with the main men about Shechem here? And he said, if you put in a good word for me, he said, maybe it would work out to my favor. So that he's diplomatically going behind that. He's pulling you strings, making people of his family relationship, because he has his eye upon a position of power. He has a lust for power, but he's going to get there, and the first stage is self-promotion and it's self-advertisement. I would say, dear brethren, when it comes to even positions in the assembly, that if it can be detected, if it can be detected that a man is working and scheming for it, if a man's pushing, if a man's manipulating, a man is testing himself, a man is advertising himself, when it comes to assembly matters, instead of that being a qualification, that's about the biggest disqualification that a man could have. Here's a man gets power, but he starts off by suggesting himself as the number one candidate. I don't really want to think about his advertisement, but I want to think about the arguments that he uses. He tells the men of Shechem, look again at verse number 2. He says, tell me this. He says, is it better for you that all the sons of Jerubbaal, the 70 of them, should reign over you, or that one reign over you? And he says, remember also that I am your bone and your flesh. How do you see? He has two arguments. The first argument that he uses is really a numerical one. He says you have a choice. You have a choice. He says you can either have 70 men ruling over you, or you can have one. And he says, which of the two would be the best? Was that the only choice? Was that the only choice? Was that a true description of the situation? Were those the only alternatives? We can't do it tonight. This is now one of the problems of reading into this, jumping into the middle of the book. If we had just turned back a page to Judges chapter 8, after Gideon had conquered all the Midianites, And he had accomplished, with the Lord's help, a tremendous victory. All the people came to Gideon. They said, "Gideon, Gideon, we would want you to be king over us." Gideon says, "Never." He said, "I'm not going to be your king." He said, "The Lord will be your king." And he said, "The Lord alone will be your king. I will never be your king." What does this man say? He doesn't say, "Do you want the Lord to be your king? Do you want the 70 to be the king? Or do you want the one to be the king?" He leaves the Lord out. And he says to the men of Shechem, he says, "Now you've got two choices." He says, "You can have 70 or you can have one." If the men of Shechem had been as alert as they should have been, they should have just said to him, "Abimelech, it's neither 70 nor is it one. It's going to be the Lord." But he presented his case in such a way that the thing was loaded in his direction before it got very far. I would say that he was one of the first men in the Bible to be recommending one-man ministry. He said, "Don't have a plurality." He said, 70 men, he said, "This thing will never go." And he said, "If you get a plurality, you're just going to be top heavy and you're going to be crushed." He said, "Why not give it all to one?" You see his argument? He had a numerical argument. I'll tell you, dear brethren, that kind of argument has carried sway in the minds of thousands of people. Right across the world, the religious world, as we look upon it tonight, many people, congregations have said, "Well, I know." They say, "We know. We know that the Bible says we should have in the assembly a plurality of elders. We know that. The New Testament constantly speaks about a number of elders in each church." But it really doesn't work. It's far, far better. And it's more practical. And it's more manageable. Instead of having a plurality, if you get one, you get a pastor, you get a preacher, and put him at the pulpit, and let him have the authority, and the whole thing works much more easily. You see, that's a frequent argument throughout the course of Christian history, but it's not a new argument, for it's as old as Abimelech. 70 or one? I don't like his arguments. Not only had he the numerical argument, but then he had a natural argument. He said, "I'll tell you, I can't but admire him, you know." He said, 70 or one, he said, "You take your pick with that." And he says, "Actually," he says, "I think I just meant to say to you," he said, when you're having a meeting to discuss it," he says, "don't forget that I'm your brother. And if you're going to pick one, like, don't forget about me, because I'm related to you. Don't be picking one out of the 70. Don't be picking one of them, but make sure that I'm the closest, and I should really have it because I'm related." You see his argument? Here's a man gets position because he promoted himself, because he advertised himself, because he had arguments that didn't present the case properly. Because of natural relationship, do you see the things that he was working on? Has it ever happened? You tell me. I'm sure it hasn't happened in Iowa, but you may have heard about it elsewhere, that a man got a position in assembly just because of the family that he belonged to. Just because of the people that he was related to. "Because my father was an overseer." My own father's not an overseer. "But because my father's an overseer, it doesn't automatically mean that I should be. Because he's an overseer, it doesn't mean that I can't be. But authority in the assembly is not something that just goes from father to son or from brother to brother." Here's a man felt, "I should get position number one because of my natural relationship." His advertisement was faulty and his arguments were flawed. The men of Shechem fell for him. Just fell for him. They didn't seem to have any real deep discernment of what this man was working at. And I can see from the start that he wasn't a good candidate for putting into a position of power. How did he get on after that? Well, you just look at the next verse. It tells us, his mother's brethren spake to all these words, their hearts inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, he is our brother. And they gave him 70 pieces out of the house of Baal Berit, and he hired vain and light persons which followed him. Now the amazing thing to me is this, that here's a man and he's nothing but an upstart, and he's nothing but a usurper, and he's just scrabbling for power, and he's just clawing his way to the top, and he has just got the ambition for authority, and in his heart of hearts he's just a natural and a carnal man. But when he makes a suggestion, it doesn't seem that he had the slightest bit of trouble in getting a following. They nearly give him a green light right away. They say, oh, it's a good idea. It's a good idea. It's a good idea, Abimelech. We never heard the likes of this. They said, actually, you go ahead and we'll finance the whole thing. And they went into the temple of Baal Berit. Now, whose temple was the temple of Baal Berit? You say they didn't have...
What? Yeah, what? You say that... This is Shechem. This is the place where Jacob buried the idols. This is the place where Joshua said, put away the false gods and serve the Lord with sincerity and truth. And he set up a pillar. This man is made king beside the tree and beside the stone that was the very condemnation of idols. And yet in that very town they actually built a temple to an idol.
Baal Berit. And when they want to finance this man's journey for power, they go into the temple of Baal Berit and they get money. He uses the money and he gets a lot of vain and light fellows. Just a bunch of rascals. A bunch of boys that would be ready to cause trouble anywhere. And he's going to pay them. And he's going to bribe them. And now he goes down and he says, I'm right on the royal road to kingship. He says, I've got the whole men of Shechem. I've got them blindfolded. He said, I have got men and I've got money. And he said, the next thing that I'm heading for is the monarch. You would say, how did they not see through him? How did they not catch him on? How did they not discover that he was beginning to take advantage of them? Well, it seems to me that the men of Shechem had got so far away from God that they had begun to lose their discernment. If they had gotten far enough away from God to build a temple to idols in their town, they were fairly well down the slope. If they had brought idolatry back into the thing, and things that shouldn't have been there at all, things that belong to the other side of the flood, things that belong to the outside world, if they had brought these things into the town, they'd already lost their ground. And when they weren't right with God, it wasn't too long until they became all confused between each other. Have you ever noticed that even in assembly life, men who want to seize power and men who want to position themselves as dictators and despots over the saints, have you ever noticed that generally speaking they don't have any trouble getting a following? This man, mind you, his followers weren't men of character. It says they were vain and light persons. And if you had seen Abimelech going down the road with his men and with his money, and he's heading for the position of power, if you had any discernment at all, you would have said, well now, that's a carnal man and he has a bunch of carnal men behind him. It has very often amazed me that when problems come into assembly life, it's really amazing, brethren, to see the type of people that club together. And And I have often noticed when things in assembly life seem to be going fairly smoothly. Now listen very carefully. They be going fairly smoothly, and maybe just a little ripple of discontent here and there, and nothing too much being said. It's going along like that, very, very happily, nothing too serious. Then there comes a bit of a bump, and there's somebody rises up. And you'd be just surprised how many people come out of the shadows to follow him. Now listen, dear brother. Don't you become the follower of an upstart. Don't become the follower of a carnal man. Don't become the follower of someone who just has a lust for power and just wants to get a position of authority. That's no use at all amongst the people of God. That's the very kind of thing that's condemned here in this chapter. You know, Abimelech got into power because of the men that he had and because of the money that he carried. I don't think it happens too often. But I would nearly be afraid that in some times amongst the Lord's people there are men get into power just because of the connections they have. Because of his finance. When it comes to the qualifications of elders in the New Testament, you know as well as I do, a man's encouraged because of his character. Just the features of his character. Now, what did he do next? You say you've only got to verse 3 and verse 4. He hasn't got crowned yet. He hasn't reached the pinnacle yet. He's well on the path, but he hasn't got... Look what he did. Verse number 5. It says he went unto his father's house at Ophrah, and he slew his brethren, the sons of Gideon, 70 persons upon one stone. That's shocking. That's dreadful. His ambition, his arguments, his associates. And now I want to think about his atrocity. Now he knows. He knows that there are 70 men more worthy of this position than I am. And he knows that there are 70 men have a title to this position that I don't have. They're the sons of Gideon, and they're far more honorable men than I am. And he said, the only way that I can make sure that nothing will stop me, he says, I'll knife the whole bunch of them. And he went down with these lot of rascals that he gathered round him, and he paid them their blood money, and they went with the silver out of the idol's temple, jingling in their pockets, and they killed the 70 sons of Gideon upon one stone. I don't know exactly what the stone was, but there must have been some stone somewhere in the land of Israel that was just drenched with blood. And every one of those 69 casualties, thank God, was one of them escaped. God always keeps a man out of the massacre. Even when evil seems to be rampant, and when all that's twisted and crooked seems to be winning the day, and when wrong and evil seems to be on the throne, dear brethren, we can take comfort in the fact that God's still on the throne. There's one man escapes the massacre, but 69 of them were completely eliminated. Here's a man who's going to climb to authority at the cost of the life. He'll knife other people so long as he gets to the top. You wouldn't like to be like Abimelech, sure you wouldn't. I hope there's no brother in this meeting. And you have made advancement because you've been willing to knife some other brother. I know out there, you see, that's the way they say it's done. They say if you get... Look, I see, I was talking to our brother today about self-esteem. And out in the world, that's what they say. They say if you're going to be quiet, and if you're going to be meek, and if you're going to have that patience, and if you're going to have that humility, those things that they talk about in the Bible, they say if you're going to be like that, you'll get nowhere. You need to have a little bit of self-esteem, and you need to be able to present yourself well. And you need to be able to push a little bit and to elbow a little bit and to keep the right context. And you needn't be afraid to climb on the back of the neck of other people if you want to get up. That's the whole language in the kingdoms of this world. But dear brethren and sisters, in the kingdom of God, the one that will have the highest place is the one who humbled himself. And the one upon whose brow they put the crown of thorns is the very brow that in due course will carry the many diadems. And if I have to go forward by hurting another brother to get forward, it'd be a far wiser course for me just to stay where I am until God makes a space. You know, people are terribly afraid. Younger brethren and people are afraid, you know, if I don't just have the right contacts, and if I don't have the right connections, and if I don't have the right telephone numbers, and if I don't have the right people, I might be forgotten about or I might be overlooked. And maybe there's a younger brother in this meeting, and you think that the older brethren in the meeting haven't just noticed how super a Christian you are, and you feel a little bit hurt, and you're wondering what you can do to make your presence felt and to push yourself forward, for no one seems to have noticed that you should be at the front and they're keeping you back, and you feel a little bit grieved about it. I'll tell you, go away home tonight and sleep more content than ever, for when God wants you to come forward, He'll make a space that nobody else can fill. If the men of Israel had had their way, the little shepherd boy keeping sheep on the hills of Bethlehem would never have seen the door of the palace. But God overruled in a sovereign way. Even Samuel the seer didn't notice it. Samuel the seer overlooked him, and he said, I can see all the other boys. Samuel was called a seer. A seer. He was a sort of blind that day. He couldn't see the man at all. God said, you go to Bethlehem, for I have seen a man amongst his sons. And when Samuel the seer came, he couldn't even see him. God said, Samuel, I want to tell you, your eyesight's not like mine. And before the day was over, the anointing oil was running down the golden hair of the boy that was least thought of. I never have to push myself. Because if God wants a man in a place, He will bring him to that place, no matter how many stand in the way. And here, He absolutely slaughters 69 worthy men upon a single stone. Well, and he comes and they crown him king. It wasn't a great way to get to power, sure it wasn't. You don't really think, do you, that the men of Shechem made a great move that day when they promoted a person like that? That's the first division of my message tonight. Here's the men of Shechem, and they have encouraged this man. They have promoted this person into a position over them, and you're beginning to get a little bit of suspense, and you say, how is it going to work out? To have a man like that in a place of authority, how would it ever work out? That's why we need to be very careful in the assembly about who gets into the place of authority, because the men in authority have tremendous influence on the whole place. The men of Shechem. Before I finish, I'll not be talking about the person they promoted, we'll be talking about the price that they paid. And they gave him 100 pieces of silver out of the temple of Belbury, but I tell you, they paid far more heavily than that. I think I will take a minute just to take a closer look at this, because you mightn't have just gotten the picture, and I know it's really gone back into the previous part of the book of Judges a little bit, and that's what I didn't want to do. But this man Abimelech, these 70 people that he killed were sons of Gideon. This man Abimelech was a son of Gideon. Now Gideon had 70 wives and he had 70 sons. Poor old Gideon. Ah, it's a pity he finished so badly, isn't it? He made a bad mess at the end. 70 wives and 70 sons. That was bad enough. But as well as 70 wives, he also had a concubine who lived in Shechem. She wasn't his wife. I don't say any more just in a mixed audience like this. He had a concubine, and this boy Abimelech was a son of the concubine. So he was a half-brother of these 70. Now, in those ancient days, talking again about natural relationships, in those ancient days, the 70 sons of Gideon by his legal wife, if you can speak about such a thing. I don't know how he coped with 70. Some of them people I gather here and there and yonder round the globe have bothered enough coping with one. So that a man having to cope with 70, well, the Lord bless him. I do not know how it'll ever work out. But these 70 legal wives, the 70 sons were entitled legally to the direct line of inheritance. But this son of a concubine, this concubine, as you know, was just a slave who was manipulated. She didn't have any legal rights. Consequently, her son didn't have any title to the inheritance of the father. Now, you can nearly gather that this boy Abimelech, when he was being brought up, because of his family background, and because he knew the way he had been cheated, and through no fault of his own really, he had come into the world crippled, as far as the inheritance was concerned. Can you see that this man, boy, would have grown up with a bit of a chip on his shoulder? And he would have said to himself, like, he's my father, just as much as those 70 boys, and I'm going to get nothing out of this. He says, by hook or by crook, I'll get to the top, he says. I've lost a whole lot of the middle. And you know what he did? He brought into the nation of Israel, and he brought into the city of Shechem something that was actually a family problem, and he wrecked the city of Shechem over it. Can I say, there's one great thing about being a stranger. If you get one chance, I think I'm saying things, I'll just get one chance and then it'll be farewell forever. But I just have to say what's on my mind from the Bible. I'm just a stranger, so you'll give me a stranger's pardon. But can I say, brethren, I don't know what family problems there might be at Jarna Villa. I've every reason to believe there are none. I've seen the happiness of the Lord's people, and I take all that with great joy. But let me say this. Whatever domestic and family problems there might be, inheritance and the type of thing that I've just been talking about, make sure that you settle them as a family problem and don't wreck the assembly with them. Bring in family problems into the nation and the whole thing become chaotic. And there were casualties. 70, 69 fresh young men. What potential might they have had for God and the people of God? And they're just lying with their blood spilling out over a stone because a man is jealous. Oh, dear brethren, it's right when the Bible said that jealousy is as cruel as the grave. So he gets there, maybe with his family background and the chip on his shoulder and the old gripe and the old grudge. All that was festering in Abimelech's spirit. And now at last, He has spilled out all, spewed out all the acid, and he's made king. The person that they promoted. When they were at the celebrations, and they just had said, God save the king. Abimelech, not the like of him. They heard a fellow shouting, hi, hi! And they wondered who this was. And they looked down, and there was the one boy that had escaped. He was away up Mount Gerizim, just over the top of Shechem, about 200 feet above the city of Shechem, where they were having a celebration, and they made Abimelech king. This fellow was perched about 200 feet up, less than a quarter of a mile away. He didn't just go too close. You know, there's times when you're better a bit back from the preacher. I see you people keep a safe distance here, so I don't know what the reason for that is, but it's making me cautious anyway. And he kept a safe distance, for he knew that my 69 brothers are down if I go too close here. But he says, I want to tell them. He says, I want to tell them before they go another single day. He said, I want to tell them from God what exactly they have done and the type of man that they have accepted and the type of person that they have promoted. And he said, I don't want them to be doing this in ignorance. Abimelech might have blindfolded them, but he said, I'm going to tell them. And this preacher stood on his pulpit, the natural pulpit, Mount Gerizim. You remember? God told Moses, and Joshua did it. He said, when you get into the land, Moses, he said, go to the middle of the land, Shechem,
Go to Shechem. I didn't get time to speak about this last night. He said, go to Shechem. And he said, get six of the tribes to stand on this mountain. And he said, get six of them to stand on this mountain. On the Mount Ebal, he said, let them shout out the curses. And he said, on the Mount Gerizim, let them shout out the blessing. And he said, at Shechem, you make up a big wall. And he said, write out the commandments and my law on it. And he said, let the people know that Shechem's at the center of the land. And the only way that this land will ever prosper is if they keep my law right in the middle. I would say that's a good secret for any assembly. Make sure the Bible's in the center of things. That's what they did at Shechem. Gerizim, the Mount of Blessing, Ebal, the Mount of Cursing. Now, when Jotham came to preach, what mountain did he go on to? He went on to Mount Gerizim. But you see, sure, that wasn't the place to go because he pronounced a curse. I sure did. But he pronounced a curse from the Mount of Blessing because he wanted to teach the men of Shechem that by promoting a wretched creature like Abimelech and putting him in the place of power, instead of having God's blessing, they had actually turned the blessing into a curse and they were flying in the very face of God. His pulpit was a very strange one. He spoke a parable. Now, boys and dears, look at the time it says. I've only got Abimelech. I couldn't stop without getting this boy Abimelech down. There's a wee bit at the end I really love, you know, so I'm going to push this bit in to get at this. He told a parable. It's really a fable. You know there's a difference between a parable and a fable. I can't stop to tell you the difference now. Ask me afterwards, but it's called a parable here. The word probably should be translated fable. And he told about the trees. The trees one day had a conversation. There was the olive tree, the fig tree, and the vine tree. And the old thorn bush. And the three said, we're looking for a king. They said, Mr. Olive Tree, will you become king? He said, what? He said, me become king? He said, sure, I'm doing a good job here. He said, I'm producing oil. And he said, look at all these lovely berries that I'm producing. God has given me the ability to produce oil. And he said, you take these berries and you can make soap out of them. I read here tonight at Mrs. Kringle's house. She showed me a book on Shechem in the modern day. And it says that the biggest piece of industry in the modern day Shechem, Nablus, is soap production. And they get the soap from the multiplicity of olive trees that are around that area. The olive tree says, I'm not going to leave my fatness. He said, people get light, the oil for the light, and they're making soap. He said, I'm doing a good service. He said, I'm not interested in power. He said, I'm interested in produce. Then they came to the fig tree. They said, well, what about you, sir? Will you become king? He said, me? He said, you want me to pull up my roots and go way up here and wave about? The word promoted means to wave about. You know, some people, once they get into authority, they get very shaky. But I'm not saying much more about that. He says, do you want me to wave about? He says, sure, I'm giving people good food. My sweetness? The olive tree wouldn't leave his fatness. The fig tree wouldn't leave his sweetness. And then they went to the vine. They said, what about you? Would you become... He said, not at all. He said, sure, what about the grapes? What would happen to the grapes if I was waving about in midair? He said, when I'm just down here where God has put me, he said, I have grapes. And it's not so much fatness nor sweetness, but he said it's gladness. He says, what I do gives the people joy. Cheer up the heart of man. So they couldn't budge them. Every one of those trees was just content where God had put them. And then they came to the old thorn bush. they said to him, would you become king? He jumped out of the ground right away. He couldn't wait. He said, I'll be king, certainly. He says, I'm not the king. He says, king, sure. He says, come underneath my shadow. Did you ever get much shadow underneath a thorn bush? The bush that had nothing was ready to jump, but the trees that had something to give were very reluctant to move. You know, this parable of Jotham, one thing that it teaches me is a great spirit of contentment. Now, the vine couldn't grow figs, and the fig tree couldn't produce olive berries. But every one of those trees was just content where God put it.
Dear brother, let me say this to you. Don't you be worried about authority in God's assembly, but be greatly concerned about usefulness.
You see, no two of us is exactly the same. I told them down in Hatesville last week. Will you hear this now?
If anyone, any dear brother or sister has to leave or be in a hurry, I'm going to preach till about 9:15 here. So just relax, relax. But if you have to leave, you have to leave, go ahead. I'm not considered disrespectful, but don't all of you believe in, please. A few of you said. I told them in Heightsville last week, no two of us the same. These three trees, each one was different. That tree couldn't do what that one did, and the middle one couldn't do what the other two did, but it took the whole three of them to supply all that was needed. Gladness, fatness, and sweetness. Each one made his contribution. They were different, but they were complementary. They weren't competing. Dear brethren, we are different. And what I told them in Heightsville last week was just this. You'll never see the likes of David Gilliland at Jarnavilla again. You'll never have the likes of me here again. I'm unique. There's not the likes of me in the whole of the world. You say you're worse than Abimelech.
No, not the likes of me. You'll never meet the likes of me again.
And I have met people here this week, and I'll never meet the likes of them again.
Not the likes of me.
And I also told them in Hatesville that nobody was allowed to shout out hallelujah.
God has made each one of us. You can do things that I couldn't even touch. I could maybe make a bit of a stagger at things that you wouldn't just be so good at. No two of the brethren, every brother, every sister in the assembly at Jarnavilla, you have a contribution to make. And dear brother, let me tell you this. Don't you be worrying about clawing for position. Bring a wee bit of sweetness to the assembly. Bring a little bit of fatness. Bring a little bit of gladness. Don't be a troublemaker. Don't be a crank. Don't be awkward. Don't be dour and sour. Don't have a lust for power. Just come and occupy the place that God has put you in. And do what He has given you the capacity to do. And if you're just a vine, don't be trying to produce figs. And if you're just an olive tree, don't be trying to produce grapes. Every one of us with a different gift for a different purpose, complementary. But the old thorn bush, all it could do was to hurt people. Get a big thorn in you or something like that. You know, I have discovered in my little time moving around that some of the most hurtful people and some of the most awkward people and some of the people that are as dry as a stick, as dry as an old thorn bush, just as dry as a stick, and just as hard as could be, nothing soft about them, nothing suitable about them, nothing sweet about them, no grapes or berries or figs, nothing like that, just dry and hard and very pointed. Those are the very people that are reaching for power. And the men who are least able to fill it are the men who are most ready to grasp for it. And Abimelech was just like the old bramble, a useless man in every way. You know, tell me this, do you think in the Garden of Eden there were any fig trees? We'll ask that to the Sunday school children sometime. Yes, there were fig trees in the Garden of Eden, weren't there? Do you think there was an olive tree in the Garden of Eden? Yes, I do. I do think that. I'll ask Adam anyway. And do you think there was a vine in the Garden of Eden? I do. Tell me this. Was there any old bramble bushes in the Garden of Eden? No. You see, the man that got the power here, he was just like a bramble bush. And he was the product of a fallen earth. And he was the brand mark of the curse. And they promoted a man who had the marks of the fall in him. The hurtful marks of the fall. The product of the curse. And it's no surprise to us that he brought a curse on. Now, listen to this. Jotham says to them, he says, I want to ask you a question. When he finished his parable, and then he did what I'm going to do. When he finished his preaching, he ran away. So I'm going to clear out very quickly here. He says, I want to ask you a question.
He says, when you made this man king, he says, did you act truly and sincerely? What? Twice over. He says, did you do it truly and sincerely? You see, you were talking about that last night. When Joshua was preaching, the old man was preaching at Shechem, he said, serve the Lord in sincerity and truth. Here's a man preaching to the very same city. He said, have you forgotten the sermon? He said, the old stone, when Joshua preached, he said, this stone has hurt everything. He said, this stone has hurt. Sure, a stone can hear nothing. What was Joshua talking about? He says, this stone has hurt it. I have told you to serve the Lord in sincerity and truth. You know, if the walls of Yarnavilla Gospel Hall could speak out, this place has heard some preaching over the years. And I feel that we have done things at Lurgan. And if the walls were prepared to speak out when the things were done, the very walls, the bricks in the walls, let me have bricks here, whatever you have there, bricks in the walls could speak out and say, gentlemen, gentlemen, do you not remember the man that preached here 10 years ago? And if you had listened to what he said, you wouldn't be doing this. And Jotham said, gentlemen, gentlemen, sincerity and truth. Sincerity and truth, the man preached here a number of years ago. He said, did you act truly and sincerely? He said, are you fulfilling the ministry of Joshua when you made this man king? Then he cleared off. Now, how did it finish? That was the part. I think he said to them, he said, I want you to listen to me so that God will listen to you. What did he expect? Well, I think that old Jotham expected when the people would hear that and they would sit and they would think, We have made a bramble bush here, the king. We're going to be under thorn bush rule. You know what they should have done? They should have said, Abimelech, look, we have made a mistake here. This thing's over. We are not going on with this. You're no longer king. We have grieved the Lord. We haven't acted honorably. We haven't acted sincerely. We haven't been truthful. We are going to stop this. But the Bible tells us that they kept him there for 3 years in spite of the ministry that they heard. But Jotham preached his sermon and he disappeared. They heard it. They didn't put it in their... He told them. He said, you see that old bramley bush? He said, someday when it gets a bit hot, he said, he'll go and fire the whole lot of you before. So how did it finish up? Just give me 2 minutes. Well, after 3 years, I tell you, that was 3 miserable years in Shechem. They had all their problems. I can't go into them all. There's a big chunk of the chapter that I left out in the reading even. But they had different sorts of problems. And after 3 years, they actually fell out with old Abimelech. And one day when they were out working in the fields, you see, Shechem was a place where people liked to have a field to work in. Old Abimelech came down and he slaughtered the whole bunch of them. So there were no more workers left in the field. You see, bad rule stops sowing. Abimelech rule means there'll be no labouring in the field. Bad rule in the assembly means that the district and the area will not be worked as it should be. He killed the workers in the field. And then some of them, the rest of them that were left, they went up into the tower. And he got the branches, the very trees that should have been for fruit and helpfulness. He got the branches and put them round the tower and he set them alight. And there was 1,000 Shechemites were burned alive. Mind you, they paid a price for what they did. And dear brethren, let me say this. If we push men into authority that are not fit to hold it, it may seem to be the easy thing to do at the time. But it'll only take a matter of years to show that a big price has to be paid. Later on, this very same nation pitchforked Saul into position. But they paid the price for it. So we need to be very careful. Then, when he had finished, when he burned them all at Shechem, he destroyed the city. All that was built up. There was death, there was destruction, and he destroyed the city, erected completely what other men had built up for years. He just demolished it. See, that can happen. Bad rule breaks down what has been built up, and he sowed salt over the whole area. And I don't know, what was the purpose of sowing salt over the whole area? Would anything grow? There was nothing ever grew there. I could take you to places, I don't think there'll be any of them in Iowa. I could take you to places where once there was a vigorous assembly, but the wrong men got into power. What a previous generation built up has been smashed to pieces. And you could go to that area and try to preach the gospel, but you're just wasting your breath, because nothing ever grows. But let just now, he went to another place to do the same, and thank God there was a woman there. Oh yes. How on earth she got a millstone away up to the top of the tower, I do not know. You know, some good women can do strange things. She was a step ahead. He was going to destroy the fruit, but she was still concerned about food. This people needs food. He was going to stop the seed growing, but she was interested in threshing grain. And she got the millstone up to the top of the tower. And when she looked out over the edge, there was old Abimelech building more sticks at the bottom. And she just rolled it over and cracked his skull. Hit the biggest part of it. A big head and big ideas, and just cracked his skull open, and when it opened up there was nothing inside. Just a big headed man, and bashed his brains out, and he was so badly injured, he said to the little man, oh, he said, kill me. He said, kill me here. But he said, I don't want him to say that a woman killed mighty Abimelech. And the young man killed him, and he lay down beside the stone, and I looked at his corpse beside the stone. And I said, well, my good friend, you killed 69 men on one stone, and you have died on another stone. And when I read a thing like that, that puts a shudder into my down my spine and into my soul, and I put the sight of another verse of the Bible, whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also. When you go home tonight, think about all these women in the book of Judges that God has made, got to men's heads. It's a job, I can tell you. Remember the woman took the hammer and banged it through the fellow's head. And then this woman dropping a stone, and then poor Samson, there was a woman got at his head. Dear brethren, watch that women don't go to your head, because if they do, in some of their devices, it can have very, very serious effects. This book of Judges is a serious book telling us how to rule. Now let me just say, I'm going to pray. In Genesis, Shechem is the place of compromise. In Joshua, Shechem is the place of commitment, total commitment. In the book of Judges, Shechem is the place where there should have been